Hey everybody, welcome back to Broken to Barbell. This is Tanner.
This is Sam.
And this is Carly.
And welcome to our 24th episode, 2 years of Broken to Barbell. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Woohoo! Insert crowd cheering noise here.
We've come so far from that first Goals episode.
Oh, that Goals episode.
2 years
ago. That Goals episode keeps popping up on Best of the Podcast on Apple iTunes. And I'm like, no.
I wonder how that works. Like, if someone subscribes, are they offered the first podcast or are they offered the most recent?
I would hope the most recent.
Because I don't know how that Goals one keeps getting recycled.
Yeah. Are you listening to it on repeat, Sam?
Yeah.
If anyone's listening, please don't listen.
Stop listening to the Goals episode. You know what we should do? We should do a reaction podcast where we play a little bit of the Goals episode and then we come back and react to it.
It would just be me with my head down the whole time. I have nothing to say.
Anyway. I think that's coming up in the future. So what have you guys been up to? Sam, what's going on? Anything new and exciting?
Not much. Just prepping away. Getting into that low carb. And I've never, ever been low carb before my entire life. I literally only eat carbs. So it's very rough.
So basically, like, no more pasta.
Yeah.
That sucks. I want pasta.
What's the official countdown? How many days?
I think it's like 3 months and some days. I still haven't decided what show. I keep saying that I'm going to do one and then I keep changing it. So I don't really know. 3 months-ish.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Carly, what have you been up to?
Still powerlifting.
I feel like everyone's like, yeah, we're still just doing the same thing.
Same stuff. I finished my semester of grad school. I made it out alive, passed my classes. You know, like, I've just realized to never underestimate my ability to get shit done. Like, I always think in my head that my head's going to explode and that I have so many things going on, but then time passes and I actually am doing things that I'm supposed to be doing.
My favorite part about being friends with Carly is when I'm sitting in my living room, she'll come over, walk in, run through my house for like 5 minutes and then leave.
That's all the time I have.
Okay, it was nice seeing you. Bye.
That's all the time I have. No, but I'm free for a month.
Yay. I'm actually really excited because it was really... Your pursuit of becoming a better person is really impeding our friendship.
I apologize.
I've barely got to see you this whole month.
I know, and it's terrible. I mean, I keep trying to hang out with people, and I'm like, you know what? Actually, I can't because I procrastinate everything, and I need a full Sunday to get caught up on all of my studies. But no, I'm really looking forward to having like a mental break this month. I finally saw a
break from
school.
Mental stress or a mental break?
No. A break from mental stress. I finally saw a therapist yesterday. So I'm finally practicing what I've been preaching for the last 2 years on this podcast. It went well.
That's good. So. Are you going back for a second?
Yeah,
nice.
In January. So,
just once a month, for now.
He was like, he's like, you seem pretty stable. I don't think I need to see you weekly. I was like, okay.
I didn't know you were such a good liar.
No, I cried twice.
Perfect. I've never cried in therapy, but
you also didn't cry in A Star Is Born, and I was weeping.
Well, I have opinions about that movie. I have unpopular gay opinions about that movie.
I don't know if I've ever seen you cry. Actually, now that I think about it,
I'm stoic.
I cry all the time.
I want to cry more, but
you're like Cameron Diaz in that movie. What movie?
Literally, I think that's why I like, that's why The Holiday is my guilty Christmas pleasure, is because I identify with Cameron Diaz.
I do also love The Holiday. Let's watch it today.
I'm down.
Okay, actually. Anyway, what are you up to?
I've been doing, remember over the summer I bought that meal plan thing from that guy, and it came with like a workout plan. So I finally, like, I made a spreadsheet of the workout plan because it was just a list, and I don't like that. So I made a spreadsheet so I can record it all. So I've been doing that. I actually think it's been working because I just feel like my shoulders and chest are bigger and my waist is smaller.
Well, you look good.
Thank you. And it's probably just because half of the entire workout plan is spending 30 minutes at a time on the fucking Stairmaster. So, which I like the Stairmaster better than running. At least it's better than that.
That's true.
And I went to see my therapist too. That was fun. But at the same time, I I don't know, work has been really stressful and life has been stressful and the holidays are stressful. So I asked my doctor to go back on anti-anxiety meds. So I started those and I really haven't noticed anything different except I sleep way better at night now. So that's up. That's what's new with my life.
Well, that's a positive.
Yeah. I'm getting 8 hours of sleep. Who knew it could be so beneficial? Yeah, so that's what's new with me.
Well, so we have a guest today.
We do. We have a special guest with us.
I know him pretty well.
Very well.
He's my brother, John. So we wanted to bring my brother John on to talk about his accident that he had in 2008. So, John, you want to give a little background on yourself and your accident?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
As Carly said, I was in an accident in 2008. It was a diving accident. I was at the beach with some friends. I was stone cold sober. I did what thousands of people have done thousands of times. Running through the water. It was fairly shallow, but as I got out a little bit further, I dove into a wave, and what I thought was 3 or 4 feet deep was actually about a foot deep, maybe a little less. My head hit the sand, pinned my chin down against my chest, and the bones in my neck gave way and snapped, and I broke my neck instantly. There's a lot of things that I remember. I remained conscious the entire time. As soon as I hit, the one thing that ran through my mind over and over and over was regret. It wasn't fear. It wasn't worry. It was more anger than anything, and it was anger at myself. I kept questioning myself, saying, John, what did you just do? Why did you do that? What did you do? And I laid there underwater, face down.
So you couldn't move?
No, yeah. As soon as I hit, I was paralyzed instantly.
Jesus.
So, yeah. I couldn't breathe or anything, and I had no way of turning myself over since I couldn't move. So I just kind of looked around. And eventually a wave flipped me over. It was, I don't know, it was probably 5 to 10 seconds face down underwater. But, I mean, it felt like 25 minutes because you don't know what's going to happen. But eventually a wave did flip me over enough to kind of breathe. When you become paralyzed, you don't feel anything from your neck down. So even being able to take deep breaths, that involves moving your chest cavity, that was impossible. So I couldn't scream. I couldn't yell out for help. I just kind of laid there until eventually a lifeguard came out. It's pretty creepy, actually. I dove into the water about, I think we figured out it was 4:35, 4 a.m. And the lifeguards went off duty at 5. If it would have been another 20 to 25 minutes later that this would have happened, I probably would have died. Or one of my friends would have pulled me out and probably did more damage than what they would have meant to do. But yeah, the lifeguard was able to get to me. They got me up on shore, and that's when all the fun really started. But yeah, that was in June of 2008, so just over 10 years ago.
So the lifeguard, how did they know you were in trouble?
Well, I'm 6'5", 6'6". I weigh about 215, 220 pounds. At the time, I was about 205 pounds, probably around there. And everyone that's splashing, playing around in the shallow water is little kids. So when you see someone as big as I was laying face down, they kind of knew something was wrong. And they said later, a couple of the ones that were standing up on shore saw the whole thing happen, and they kind of thought something was wrong. But yeah, it was pure luck. It has to be. Complete miracle that he saw anything. But from what the information I've gathered was that it's just really strange to see someone as big as I am, an adult at the time, laying in shallow water face down with a bunch of little kids around them splashing and playing.
Yeah.
It was kind of the red flag immediately. Yeah.
And so I talked to the lifeguard. Shout out Henry. He was from Australia. I went to the beach like a couple months after the accident, I think, Sean. I can't recall exactly, but yeah. But I got to talk to him. I like took a picture with him. I was like, thanks for saving my brother's life. But
I remember the picture.
He said as soon as he saw you dive through the wave that he knew something was wrong. So like he watched the whole thing happen. So he was already on his way out there. And like Nate was with you, I believe, right?
Yep.
And he didn't know what was going on. But it was just like an absolute miracle that, that Henry, the lifeguard, witnessed it and saw it happening. So like you said, if it would have been 20 minutes later, who knows what would have happened.
There would have been no lifeguard there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like we said, I had one friend with me. My other two friends that were there had already left and gone back to the house. And the friend that was with me was ahead of me. So he had dove in before me and kept swimming out into deeper water. And then I hit, the ordeal happened. And he, from everything I've heard from him, had no idea what was going on. He came back. He was actually trying to help. But by this point, the lifeguard had got to me, and he wanted him to stay away because he knew he would do more damage than good at that point.
And that was Nate, the friend Nate that was with, with you?
Exactly.
So then once – so they – did he like – so he got you back to the beach, and then what was what happened next?
Well, they got me onto the beach, and I mean, it's I can vividly still remember this. They dragged me up onto the shore, and there was probably four or five different lifeguards around me at this point, my friend, and their faces like said everything that I knew. Like something was really bad. They all looked, the lifeguards themselves looked really, really shook up. They knew something was really wrong. I lay there and I tried to move. Nothing worked. Absolutely nothing. I could kind of arch my back a tiny, tiny bit, like maybe an inch off the ground. My hands, nothing moved. They were clasped shut. My feet wouldn't move. Toes, nothing. So I knew something was very, very wrong. They were pretty reassuring, saying it's probably just a stinger. Don't worry about it. Might just be a concussion. Not a big deal. But I could tell from their faces something was wrong. They put the neck brace on me, loaded me onto a four-wheeler type of thing, drove me up to the boardwalk, and got me on the ambulance. And from there, they took me. I was in, I don't even think we mentioned this, I was in Ocean City, New Jersey at the time. That's where the accident occurred. And they drove the ambulance to Atlantic City. And that's where I went into the emergency room. I still remember the ambulance ride. It was really weird. I was really freaked out. They could have cared less, which was, it was kind of nice, kind of put me at ease that they were talking about the Mets game and the Phillies game, and the score and that type of stuff. So that kind of put me at ease, but
yeah,
I kind of knew the gravity of the situation. I just didn't know how severe it actually was. And I didn't know what I actually did. I didn't know if it was my neck, my back, something in my head. I didn't know. So at this point they drove me to the AtlantiCare emergency room, and I went through all the normal procedures there.
So was Nate in the ambulance with you? I can't remember that part.
He might have been. He wasn't in the back with me. If he was, he would have been up
maybe
front,
at the front.
Yeah.
So I still remember like where I was at when I got the call, what I was wearing when Nate called me about the accident, because Nate was distraught. Like,
were you here in PA, or were you down there on vacation?
No,
too?
Yeah, no.
You were here
no,
in PA.
So John was on vacation with his buddies and Nate's mom.
Okay.
Right, John?
Correct.
So, like, Nate called me, and he's like, hey, like, something happened with John at the beach. Like, we don't know the extent of it. Like, we don't know how serious it is, but we think, like, we need you guys to come down to Atlantic City. So I'm like, okay, that's, like, can you give me any more details?
No big deal, but come to Atlantic City from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so I start calling my whole family. Like, no one knows what's going on. We, like, round up the troops. I think it was me, my mom, my dad, and my Aunt Karen that drove out that day. And my dad made what is normally, like, a 6 or 7 hour trip into, like, a 4 hour trip. Like, I've never seen him fly or drive that fast.
Yeah.
But we had no idea what was going on, so that was really scary. But yeah, anyway, so they took you to Atlantic City, and then like what, the guys and Rita came out?
Yeah, they had me in the ER. They did all the normal checks. Then they took me in for x-rays and the MRI, the CAT scan. I believe it was the CAT scan. It might've been the MRI. I'm not sure. One of them, I got sick. I actually started to get nauseous and I couldn't move. I was laying on my back. And it got pretty bad. I had to throw up, but I couldn't move. So it was like stuck laying on your back, trying to throw up in a machine. It was an absolute disaster. Once I went through that type of stuff, they had a pretty good idea that I had a broken neck, but they didn't tell me yet. I still remember, and this was also bad, they wheeled me out into the hall after the x-rays, and one nurse came by after a while and said, "Did you hear, honey?" And I said, "No, what?" She said, "It's your neck. It's pretty bad." And she walked away.
Left me
laying there. And was like, "You've got to be kidding me." That was the first time the fear really set in. Like I said before, it was more regret and anger at myself. But that's the first time the fear really hit that, like, you may have actually screwed up your life for good. And I didn't know. They took me into a room, and the doctor came in. He explained the situation, told me that I had broken my C6 vertebrae in, I think, 4 or 5 different places. He explained that for me to regain a normal life, they would have to fuse the C6 vertebrae to C5 and C7. So they said it broke, but he said it had bruised the spinal cord. It didn't sever the spinal cord. If it had severed the spinal cord, I would have been paralyzed from the neck down. The bruising is what caused my temporary paralysis, why I couldn't feel anything at the time. But he came in, he explained that the surgery they would have to do, it was an emergency surgery. They had to do it the next morning, couldn't wait. They were going to have to drill through the front of my throat and cut out the broken bone, basically drill it out from what I've heard. Then they turned me over, went in through the back. There's a 16-inch incision. Now it's a scar that runs down the back of my neck where they went in, and they took out the broken bone.
16-inch?
Yeah.
Right
from about where my hairline is in the back, and then it goes down in between my shoulder blades.
Wow.
It's still pretty gnarly to look at, but it was really weird for a while. They put in a steel cage where the broken vertebrae was, and then a metal plate went over top of that, and they sewed it all up. The surgery itself, well, I guess I'm jumping ahead. I still remember, like Carly said, that night after they told me it was a broken neck, my friends coming in, like, individually, and they were all pretty messed up, and I was pretty messed up, because everything's just kind of out there in the open. You don't know. You have a 14-hour surgery coming the next day that's going to determine whether you ever walk again or live. So they were all pretty distraught, but they were very encouraging. They gave me a lot of support, and I still appreciate that. Still good friends to this day with all of them. Mike Heim, Sean Faust, and Nate Silvas. That's pretty much what happened up to that point.
Yeah, that was scary, because they pretty much said, like, all right, you guys can go in. I think they sent us back in pairs, because I think I went back with Faust.
It was two at a time.
Yeah, and we had to go in and, like, basically say our goodbyes. And I'm like, this is, like, horrifying, you know? Like, because they said, like, well, it's a really risky surgery, and we don't know what's going to happen. Like you said, like, they basically said, like, he could not wake up from the surgery. I'm like,
Jesus.
Okay. So, like, we had to go in and say our goodbyes, which was really, I mean, a scary thing to have to do. But we were all just camped out in the waiting room throughout the whole surgery. Like, the whole crew was there. By that point, like, our whole family was there. All the guys, Rita. I think, but Joyce Brosnan out there then too, John? I can't remember. I mean, it was 10 years ago. Yep. But like, our Aunt Kelly came up from D.C. Ted came out. Ted Marin.
Yep.
And Mark. Yeah, like, it was just such a surreal experience, because it's like one day, like, John's at the beach with his buddies, and then the next he has broken his neck. We don't know the magnitude.
Literally, like, in a second. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, how long did you not have movement of your hands? Because that was, wasn't that
the hands took probably 6 months to move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes, I had the surgery. It lasted between 12 and 14 hours. I came to a couple days later, probably 3 or 4 days later. It was 2 or 3 days later. I came to consciousness again. They explained that everything went well.
I didn't know that you were asleep for that long afterwards.
Yeah. I kept trying to pull my, I had a breathing tube down my throat, and I kept trying to pull it out in my sleep, and they had to like latch me down to the table, I guess, while I was out, to keep me from doing that.
Wow.
Yeah, little things like that that are weird, but, I was in the ICU in the hospital for a week, and I was finally given admittance into McGee Rehab, which is in downtown Philadelphia. It's one of the best rehab centers in the country. So things started getting progressively better in the ICU. For the longest time, I couldn't sit up, so I had to stay leaned back. As soon as I went into like a sitting, like upright position, I would pass out. The blood just wasn't used to like traveling those different parts of my body at that certain rate, so I would lose consciousness really fast. And then standing up, after I could eventually sit up, standing up did the same thing. So it was everything kind of got set back in time. So you kind of had to learn how to do all the little things over again. Putting on your socks, brushing your teeth, anything had to be relearned.
How long were you in rehab in Philly?
Couple weeks.
Okay.
I think it was 3 weeks or so, maybe a little bit longer. When I first got there, I couldn't really do anything. Like I said, I couldn't move my hands at all. That was the worst part. I could start to move my feet, but I couldn't, like, stand up without any help or actually, like, move my legs. But eventually, once I got there, they put you through the rigor. From the time you wake up, sorry, I'm getting over a cold if I cough. From the time you wake up until the time you go to sleep, you're pretty much doing work on your body to get it back to normal. So I remember being in rehab. As soon as I got there, not being able to do pretty much anything. Had a wheelchair someone pushed me around in. By the time I left, I was using the wheelchair myself. I could kind of stand up, get in and out of it by myself. So over like a 3 to 4 week, probably close to 4 weeks, I could start regaining some sense of normalcy. It wasn't normal, but it was at least more normal than whenever I first got there.
Yeah, I remember you using like the toothbrush, and his toothbrush had this grip on it that was like this big. Like, obviously you can't see.
Like a pop can size?
It was gigantic, but it was foam. But like, that's all. He couldn't grip a small one.
That's the best grip you could get at that point.
Yeah. Like, I just distinctly remember his toothbrush being gigantic, and like a hairbrush, and just the little things that you wouldn't even think about not being able to use or grip that he couldn't grip. And I remember Mom always tells a story about you on the rooftop of the rehab center, and you were trying to like shoot a basketball, but you couldn't grip the ball. And like, yeah. For those of you that don't know, my brother, he's an athlete. He's 6'5", like super athletic. He's played sports his entire life. So like, basketball was his thing. So for him to potentially be paralyzed and not be able to play basketball would just be like the worst scenario, you know?
Well, even like the frustration that comes with that too. Like, I used to be able to do this, and now I can't even hold a giant basketball, you know?
Yeah. And I think
that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, for John, like, explain that piece of it, John, because I remember you being so irritated with the situation, you know, like,
yeah, and that kind of feeds into the mental health side of it that I know you wanted me to get into at some point. I was irritated by the situation, but it was never like a massive deterrent. It was always like, well, I'll be fine, I'll get through it. It's not a big deal. But it was like more of an annoyance than anything. It was like, well, after it first happened, like I said, I went through like a regret, anger type of phase. And once the surgery happened and I kind of thought like, I'll be all right. That's when the hard work aspect kicked in, where it was like, all right. Like Carly said, I was an athlete pretty much my entire life. This would be no different. I would just, there's an obstacle in front of me, I'm going to beat it. So that's what I told myself in rehab. And what was really bad is like in rehab, I always knew that I was going to be okay if I just worked hard, because I knew my spinal cord wasn't severed. It was just bruised. But yeah. I saw a lot of people there. I saw a lot of little kids, a lot of older people, a lot of fathers that were in there being visited by their kids and their spouses who had no hope. And they were moving their chairs around with a little straw in their mouth. They were paralyzed from the neck down. There was nothing you can really do about it if you sever the spinal cord. So I knew I was really lucky, and I knew there was no sense in like complaining and pissing and moaning about it. It wasn't going to help the situation. It was just going to make it worse. So I said, like, from day one in rehab that I'm not going to complain. If I'm annoyed or I'm mad, I'm just going to keep it to myself. No one needs to feel sorry for me. And that's how I went about my business. I think, and this is kind of where the mental health comes in, I think it's completely different for me than other people that have been paralyzed or broken their neck. Those that were, they weren't lucky enough to go through what I went through, where I actually can still function normally. Because I always had that hope, if you know what I mean, where, like, in the back of my mind, I knew that my spinal cord wasn't severed. Eventually, I'd be fine if I just worked hard. It's got to be completely different for the people that know from the very beginning, like, there really isn't any hope. And I think that's where, that's the saddest part of it for those type of people.
Yeah, like, that is a good point that you had. I mean, while what happened to you was absolutely terrible, don't get me wrong, the fact that you didn't sever your spinal cord, whereas someone that did happen to, and they know there's no chance, there's not even a chance of them walking again. So
it's just like, okay, this is how we live our life now.
Yeah, you just have to
kind of thing.
Have to learn to deal with that.
Your body would just become a prison at that point.
Yeah, and then that opens up a whole other can of worms with, like, euthanasia and people, families having to make really terrible and awful, hard decisions of how to,
what's the next step.
Yeah.
So
didn't tell the story, John, about was it your roommate or the person in the room next to you in rehab, where that it like shifted how you kind of like you chose to be positive about the situation because of someone you encountered?
Yeah, it was probably, I was there probably a week, and I got a new roommate. It's basically like any other hospital where you have two patients per room, kind of separated by like a curtain if you want it. His name is Omar. He was from somewhere outside of Philadelphia, and he had just been given admittance. He had MS, muscular sclerosis, which it's, to my understanding, it's like a death sentence. Slowly but surely, and it's pretty bad. I was in the room in my bed watching Sports Center or something, and a bunch of people in suits came in and they drew the curtain and they were talking to him, and basically, long story short, they told him that his insurance wasn't going to cover it, and they would be discharging him from the rehab, which he knew was basically like a death sentence. So you're listening to a fully adult male basically cry and beg and be told no. And they were basically sent him out on the street, where he probably has passed away by now. So I had to listen to that. Yeah. Which it really like set things, in perspective, where like my situation really wasn't that bad. It could have been a lot worse. And you just felt awful for this guy, and you knew there was a bunch of other people out there going through the same type of situation, where not only does he have this horrible illness, but the insurance company is going to be the determination whether he lives or dies. I mean, it's really rough. He was discharged a couple days later. I never saw him again. I don't know what happened with him. Hopefully he got better, but I mean, from what I heard at the time, it didn't sound good. He was a great guy. But yeah, like Carly said, you hear something like that, and even as bad as the situation was for me, I realized pretty quickly that it could have been a lot worse. Even going down to like the cafeteria and getting something to eat and seeing the other people who were paralyzed from the neck down or the waist down, that also put things into perspective for me pretty quickly, that there's no sense being mad. There's no sense pissing and moaning. Just get through this, have a good attitude, have a good spirit, and everything will be all right.
And then, too, I think your doctor, like, having a good, the right mindset is obviously a key. But I think your doctor said that how you were able to bounce back so quickly and whatnot was because of your stature when it happened. Like, you had a good base. Like, there's this picture of John. I think he was working in our backyard, like, the week before the accident. And he looked jacked. Like, his arms were, like, huge. Yeah. Like, it was, like, the biggest that I have ever seen him.
John, how old were you when this all went down?
20.
20. Okay.
I was 20.
So, like, he had a good... And then there was, like, a picture of him at the beach, too, right before it happened, like, that week, where you looked big and buff. And, like, the doctor said, like, the fact that he was muscular and had, like, a good...
Well, yeah, it's like, that's health. Part of the fate thing in it, which is just so weird, is, like my sister said, I was an athlete growing up. I played golf and basketball, baseball, tennis, you name it, I basically did it. And I was pretty good at most sports, but I never really took the working out, lifting part serious. I always just thought it was a complete joke. And a lot of the athletics came fairly naturally to me anyway, so I didn't really see the reason to. Hindsight, I wish I would have, but you know what I mean. Yeah, so I was always really skinny. I think I graduated high school 6'5", 150 pounds, something around there. Basically just like a beanpole, if you're trying to picture what I looked like. I went to college, and for unknown reasons to this day, I started working out like crazy. So I like to look at it now as that was just my preparation to prepare myself for my accident. I basically went through those first 2 years of college and lifted weights like crazy, put on 35, 40 pounds of muscle, and it was all in like my shoulders and my back and my neck. And yeah, like Carly said, the doctor said that was a big part of me not actually becoming fully paralyzed. Having all that added muscle and mass in that area helped immensely. And they said that, coupled with my age being young, that helped with my recovery. It would have been a lot more difficult if someone would have done what I did when they were in their 50s or 60s. It would have been a lot worse. But being 20 years old at like the peak prime of your life, that helped big time also.
Yeah, that probably, A, young-wise, helped you spring back quickly, and then B, the fact that you were active, you know, probably. Yeah,
exactly.
Your body was... sprung back even quicker because of that.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk a little bit more on the mental health piece, because this accident kind of created like a different route for you, because John started college at Clarion, and then he was going to transfer to Coastal Carolina. So like talk about when, like the timing of the accident, how that created a totally different route for you, like your decision to not transfer to Coastal Carolina. Like, give a little bit of background into that.
All right. Yeah, I went to college undecided. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I eventually switched into biology with the hopes of eventually transferring and going into marine biology, studying the ocean, which, ironically, is pretty funny. That's what it ended up being. But, yeah, after my sophomore year, I did transfer to Coastal. I already had my schedule. I had taken tour of the college, knew where I was going to live, everything. And that summer between going from Clarion to Coastal was when the accident actually happened. So after the accident happened, I was in rehab and then sent back home and had to do outpatient rehab for a while. And it was the idea of going five states away, you can still barely stand up or you can't move your hands. That idea was basically out the window at that point. Kind of accepted it and took it as a sign from God that you weren't meant to do that. There's a couple ways you could look at it. You could be bitter and say, like, why did this have to happen? It screwed everything up for me. But I chose to go in a different route. When I was in rehab, I couldn't move my hands, like I said. And at the doctor's request, and I believe my mom also told me I should start doing it, I started writing. I never really got into writing at all when I was in school. I did a couple writing projects in high school that got good reviews, good grades. And I always thought, like, well, there's, like, a little bit of a talent there that I never really looked into. And when I went back to college, I spoke with my counselor, and they said that I could get a minor in writing, professional writing, if I wanted to. So I decided to add that. I stayed at Clarion. I graduated 2011. So it was a year later than I should have. But that first semester back, I was only able to take, I think, one class, maybe two. I didn't even have my driver's license at that point. Once you become paralyzed or have certain, if you have like a seizure or something, you have to retake your driver's test. So I had to actually do that again. So it changed the course of my life, but I've never looked at it as a negative. I'm sure some people would choose to look at it as a negative, but things have worked out all right for me, so I have no reason to do that. I don't want to dwell on it and think about what could have been whenever I already know what is, and I'm happy with where my life is right now. I think it's made me a better person in the long run, which I'm grateful for. And I'm happy with where I'm at. I'm happy with my life. There's no sense in thinking about what would be different if I went to Coastal or not. Things worked out in the end.
Well, I think too with that, like I can't remember the timing or whatnot, but I remember you trying to swim after the accident, and I want to say you still had a neck brace on, but it just being in the water like physically hurt you. Like it hurt your neck or bothered your neck. So like you wouldn't have even been able to do the whole marine biology or whatever thing because after the accident, swimming hurt you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's just hard to say. I had a lot of limitations afterwards. Stuff that I still deal with. My hands wouldn't move, like I said, but not only that, you know the feeling like whenever your hand's asleep, that like prickling, tingling feeling? I had that from my fingertips to my elbows. I still have it now, but I had it really bad for probably a year and a half to 2 years after the accident. It never went away. I took pills for it. Eventually, I just went cold turkey and cut out all the pain meds and everything. But I still have that same prickly, tingly feeling in the webs of my fingers, and I still have it to this day. It's something I live with, I deal with it, and it's not a big deal. I just don't even think about it. Other little limitations, they told me that I shouldn't be lifting heavy weights, nothing over my head. I was supposed to stay away from contact sports. I'm kind of an idiot. I ignored a lot of that stuff. I started working out pretty heavily, I would say, 6 months after the accident. I was lifting in physical therapy, but it was more just like doing arm circle type of things, like nothing lifting, nothing working out. It was kind of just like to get the body to move again.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I wasn't supposed to be playing basketball again. I started playing that a few months after the accident. So yeah, I had limitations afterwards and I still have them, but it's very minimal. And I choose not to even think about it, to be honest.
So, Carly, you said in pictures that John just kind of was like built, had big shoulders and arms and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing you lost a ton of muscle mass during that whole ordeal too.
Yeah, you lose everything. So I went from, at the time of the accident, we guessed I was probably around 195, between 195 and 200 pounds. Pretty ripped up. And when I got weighed at physical, when I got checked into McGee, they weighed me, which would have been 8 days later, I weighed 155. So in 8 days, I lost 40 pounds.
Holy hell.
And it sounds insane, like it's not right, but that's what it was. If you don't eat anything for that amount of time, you're on an IV and you don't move at all. You just lay in a hospital bed and you don't move. You waste away, and that's what happened. When the muscles aren't being used for even simple things like standing up or brushing your teeth or taking a drink of water, you're just laying there. The muscles aren't being used. They'll waste away. and you're not putting food into your body to replenish anything. So yeah, I lost everything. But my neck was also really, really, really skinny. So I was in the neck brace for 3 months, a little over 3 months. And when they finally took it off, I was terrified because my head felt so heavy. Your head's like 10 pounds or something, I think I read somewhere. And it felt all of 10 pounds whenever my neck looked like somebody's wrist.
Yeah.
And it's still like skinny, my neck is, but it's not like that. That was, it was really weird. I lost, yeah, like you said, all my shoulders and traps and arms. It all wasted away, but I was fine. I mean, it was part of the ordeal. If put it this way, if that's part of the deal, I can walk again, but I'm gonna be pretty skinny, I'm gonna look a little goofy, then I'm willing to take that.
Yeah.
I think one of your physical therapists or someone said to you, or maybe it was a doctor or somewhere along the line, said, like, yeah, you did make a full recovery. You're fine. You're not paralyzed or anything, but you're fragile. So it was like when you break a lamp and glue back the pieces together, like, it'll be a lamp again, but there's still going to be cracks, you know? So, like, when you talk about limitations, like, yeah, you've made a full recovery, but you can't turn your head too quickly, or when you do turn, like, don't you have to turn, like, your whole upper body, or...
I think a lot of that was just for, like, right after the accident.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty close to normal now. They told me, like, avoid cage fighting. don't take, like, punches to the face. Try to avoid, like, whiplash. So, like, car accidents would be bad. A roller coaster that's rough could be bad. So just basically don't be stupid. I mean, things are going to happen, but... as long as I'm just, like, living a normal life, I'll be fine. And, yeah, like, I was supposed to lose a lot of range of motion with my neck, but I really didn't. I had really good physical therapists and worked really hard, and I didn't lose much. Maybe a little bit side to side, up and down, but nothing that, I mean, it's not holding me back in any way, I'll put it that way.
No, and now you can, like, dunk a basketball again, and you lift, and you're jacked. You hunt.
Yeah, I stay active. I feel like I have to at this point. If I go a certain amount of time without working out, it's like a weird feeling I get. I don't know if it's like just a mental thing or an actual physical thing, but if I go a certain, I'm not like crazy in the gym. I work out five, six days a week. Now it's just at my house, but it's just like pull ups, bench press. Shoulder press, just your normal lifting type of thing, trying to do a little cardio, abs. But I have to do it to keep me active. I'm an old 30, I guess I would put it. 30 years old, but most of the days I feel a lot older after this situation, so I try to help myself out as best possible by staying as active as I possibly can.
You're 31.
Yeah, but I was just around that. Caught me.
I was like, wait a minute, is he only 30? No.
31 and about a week and a half, so.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
No, I mean, it is incredible, and like so many people know about your story, and then therefore, we were trying to get Curtis Bell on the podcast, who went through an almost identical situation that you went through. But I think he actually had the halo drilled into his skull, which thankfully you didn't have to go through that.
Yes.
But, absolutely. It's just incredible to see where you're at now. Like, he's married, just bought a house. He has two little babies. And all of that could have been cut short if you dove through that wave a half hour later. So,
Yep. That's very true.
Do you guys have any questions about his mental health? I mean, so you do use... Sorry, I just asked you any questions, and now I'm going down.
Please go.
On a different one. So, like, you started to get into the writing thing, and that's how you switched to that when you were in college. But, I mean, you write now every single day, right? So that's been, like, therapeutic for you. You do that as a stress relief. It's your hobby. Like, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So like I said, I couldn't move my hands, so I started trying to write, like physically write, not type, trying to actually physically write, draw. When I was in rehab, and as soon as I got out of rehab, to try and get the muscles in my hands stronger. And then I took that and just kind of ran with it. I always really liked the idea of the movie business. How should I put this? I was always intrigued by it. It was never something that I ever thought I would ever actually be able to do anything with it. It was always just like kind of an interest in the back of my mind. But this kind of like opened my eyes. Like, if you want something, like, go get it. This is your chance. You were going to school for biology, but if that's something you really didn't want, maybe you want to look into writing. Maybe you want to write scripts. You want to write a story, a book, whatever. So I started working on some things. I wrote an article, a couple articles about my accident, actually, and a couple of things published by a couple local places, and it got some good reviews. Always talked about turning it into some type of story. I didn't think there was enough content there for like an actual novel or a movie, but eventually in time, I think I'll dive back into it. I've written a couple scripts with some friends that we want to get made into a movie. We're thinking about doing it ourselves, making an independent film, hopefully filming here in the next couple months. We have a lot of that going on. I work for the government. I process retirement cases for federal employees, which it's a great job. I love a lot of my coworkers, and I'm really happy to be where I'm at. But my passion now is writing, so I do that on the side, like my sisters mentioned. It is therapeutic. It kind of helps me spill my guts. I'm not a great talker. I don't really like to talk that much. So what I can't really say with my voice and my mouth, I like to say with the words on the page. So I will continue to do that, and hopefully something comes positive from that down the line.
Carly's motioning for me to ask a question, but I don't know if I have one.
It's all good.
Sam, do you have any questions about his accident or anything else?
No, I just think it's crazy how from the very beginning you were like, you never once doubted that you were not going to be okay.
Yeah, it's weird now looking back on it, because obviously I am okay. I mean, I'm sure there's some doubts that crept in, especially before I knew what was actually, like, the diagnosis. So in those, like, first couple hours after the accident and before they actually told me what it was, I'm sure there was some fear and doubt. But I don't know. Like, I've always been a deeply religious person. I leaned on God at that point, and it's hard to explain. It's just, like, a feeling came over me. And after the regret kind of subsided and the anger at myself, it was like, all right, you'll be fine. I just kept telling myself that. I just asked God to watch over me. Please keep me safe. And he did. So I'm very grateful for that.
You know how you talk about this regret that you felt immediately after the accident? So, like, obviously this is a very different scale. But I feel like I feel that same regret. Like, you know when you, like, lean too far back in a chair and then you, like, fall? Or do something absolutely stupid like that. And then you're, like, thinking in your head, like, why did you do that, you moron? Or, like, when you say something that, like, you shouldn't have said, and then immediately after, it, you're just, like, flooded with regret. Is that what you mean? Like, is that how you felt as soon as you dove through the wave? Like,
yeah, just that. I remember hitting, and I heard the bones crack, crunch, and break. And I opened my eyes. And I went to, like, push myself up and stand up like you would if you fell over, and nothing worked. And I can still picture it in my head. I said it in my brain 5 times. John, what did you do? What did you do? What did you do? Are you kidding me? What did you do? And it was like, I knew instantly, like, something was very, very wrong. And I did this to myself. You can't blame anyone else. I did it to myself. Why would you do this? I don't know if it was because, like, the situation, like, you're diving into water that is a foot deep, you idiot. Or if it's like, if it was just like the human response to the situation, I don't know. But yeah, I was instantly instantly mad at myself for what I did.
Yeah, that's just, it's just crazy to think about, like.
I think, like, saying that, just thinking about, like, same thing, like, when I was doing the Spartan training and I tried to jump up on that thing and fell and broke my skin open on my leg and had to get stitches and everything. Obviously, again, not the same magnitude, scale, yeah. But yeah, that it's like, oh, God, why did I do that?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, even, like, same with me in softball. Like, first of all, the ball was nowhere near me, and I slid into second base. I don't slide. I'm too far from the ground. And I cut open my calf for the third time, and then I had this giant open sore on my leg for, like, 4 months. I still have a scar. This was 3 years ago. And I thought to myself, like, why in the hell did you slide? Like, why did you do that, you idiot? You knew this was going to happen. You know, I mean, obviously John didn't know he was going to dive through a wave and hit a sandbar. People dive through waves all the time at the beach. But...
including Nate, the moments before him.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
It's just crazy, like, how one little thing, like, who knows, like, leading up to that week, if there was a storm that, like, caused the sandbars to form and whatnot, because he was not... in the shallow, like, he was in deeper water and then
yeah
hit the shallow part further out, which isn't common, you know,
so yeah.
It's just crazy to think about.
Yep.
John, do you have anything to add about your accident or anything?
No, I would just say thanks for having me on. I appreciate the chance to tell my story, and if anyone has had a similar situation, I would love to hear about it. If you're going through something similar right now, just keep your head up and keep fighting.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I mean, obviously, you're my brother, and...
it'd be tough to turn you down.
I don't think I would have allowed you to turn me down, but no, I mean, it was cool to hear your point of view on the accident and how you went through everything and whatnot, but... we're glad you're here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your story.
Sure thing, guys. Take care.
You too.
All right, bye. Are we done here?
John's done. But yeah, that was really cool to hear. And
I know us being friends for so, like, all of us being friends for so long, we also... were around when it happened too.
Yeah, that's, I actually even told Carly, I was like, don't fill me in on it because I want to hear it from him again, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it was weird. I mean, I didn't get into, like, the,
I mean, yeah, we were still in high school, so
yeah, that would just, it was between our junior and senior year.
Yeah.
And so, like, I didn't talk about it on the pod, but, like, I was, like, his personal nurse once he got out of rehab. I was giving him his pain meds and whatnot, and
at home. Summer.
Yeah. And so, like, we didn't talk about this on the podcast either, on it either, but my uncle had passed away earlier that year, and my dad was living with my uncle, and my uncle required a lot of help. So he had, like, basically, I'm not sure what the correct term is, but it was, like, essentially like a hospice house. You know what I mean? So, like, he had everything that helped someone that was sick or needed help. So for him to pass away earlier that year and then have this happen to John was able to just move in with my dad. And then, like, I stayed with him there, and I, yeah, like, helped him out there. So he had, like, a good setup for...
they had the bed and, I'm assuming, in, like, handrails and things like that,
yeah,
around the house. Yeah.
So it's just crazy how, like, things and timing and all that stuff happens at the right time.
Yeah.
Well, not the right time, but not the wrong time either.
Well... thank you, everybody, for coming along on this journey for the past 2 years.
Yeah,
I cannot believe that's how long this has been going on.
It still
feels like we're learning.
So, like, about that, too, just a couple shout-outs. Like, last Saturday, I was at a powerlifting meet in West Virginia, and I saw Luke McCall, who we went to high school with, and he was like, did you see the girl in your podcast shirt? And I'm like, no. Who?
Like, who is wearing our shirt? He's like, one of the competitors has your shirt on. I'm like, what?
So
like,
no way.
So yeah. I like went over and realized who it was. And it's Becca Pell. And she follows the podcast. And we're social media friends. But now we're real friends.
Love it.
So like I went up to her. I was like so excited to meet her. And I was like, we got to get a pic. Like, it was just very cool to see someone repping our podcast that we don't know personally. And like, she's just a fan of the show. So like, that really means a lot.
Well, and that's our girl in Chicago.
Yes, Kim.
Kim Possible, right?
Yes.
Yeah, she... It's just weird. You know, it's like, it's kind of just so strange to see those kind of things happen.
And the fact that it came from us just wanting to keep each other accountable, and now it's like we have people buying our clothing, we have people repping our logo on their water bottles, and it's just like... Everyone can relate. And even with John and his accident, like, he was the epitome of fitness. And then he went through this awful experience and he had to use that to fuel the comeback, you know? So like, it's just really ending the stigma around mental health. I mean, everyone has issues, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I think everyone relates so heavily to the podcast, because...
Oh, I saw something good the other day, and I wanted to say it on the podcast because, and it was somebody online trashing people who say that about mental health and going to the gym or something like that. And it was totally somebody that we don't know. Like, it wasn't like they were trashing us.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were saying like people not understanding mental health, and just because you go to the gym doesn't mean da da da. And like, I totally agreed with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's like, I know that mental health isn't all just like, oh, you'll go to the gym and get on a treadmill and you'll be fine. You know, like, I know it's way deeper than that. And, you know, sometimes it requires things like, and hopefully you're able to do these things, but things like therapy, things like, things like medication, things like self-care. And like, and that's the thing too. Sometimes the damaging part is going to the gym. You know, I mean, it's such a broad topic, and there's so many things with it.
That's a good point, because I was talking to Lisa Barsum from our gym about the same thing. And she said, like, this was a really hard year for her. She lost her mom. She had a setback at work, and then she wasn't able to compete in powerlifting nationals because she lost her mom. And, she said, like, she relates it to the squat. So, like, it's something heavy that's weighing you down, and you just got to stand it up. You know, like, when things get you down, like, all you have to do is just stand up. Just remember that. And, like, just try to shift your thinking. So, like, lifting for me and powerlifting for me has been my therapy for the last year and a half. You know, like, I haven't been seeing a therapist until this weekend. So I treat that as my therapy. And, like, Ryan and Dana are involuntarily my therapists, because they listen to me and hear me talk about things all the time, and I just use those sessions as like vent sessions, really. But I mean, it's all about the person and how they handle what they're going through, you know? Like, maybe the gym for one person causes a lot of anxiety, but for me it's like I need it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But
yeah, and that's, I just, you know, I hope even in those cases we can still be a good source of inspiration for people, you know.
Yeah, and if not, we can at least be some comedic relief.
We can at least do that much.
Yes.
Well, thanks again, guys. Like, it might seem strange, but when you buy our clothes, it actually helps us keep the podcast running for another year.
Yep.
As always, in the next year, look for more updates, more improvements.
Yeah, and
hit
us up if you know of any like causes that you're passionate about, or things that we can do to get involved, volunteering. Shout out to Biggie's Bullies. It's a pit bull rescue foundation here in Pittsburgh. That's who I went and volunteered with last weekend, 2 weeks ago, to help people get their Christmas trees. But I think it's a good collaboration between our podcast and them. So
nice.
Anything like that, if you just our DMs are open.
Yeah, slide into them. Yeah. DMs.
DMs are open.
But yeah, no, we really appreciate all of your support. it's been a good 2 years.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
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 Woo.
That was a good one.
Great. I'm going to hit stop.